But I don't know what I would do without without the families of my friends' kids that I know have their back just all the time. It's a wonderful community to be a part of, and it's that community and that solid foundation and that upbringing in churches and families that love and care and friends that are there for you that a lot of our clients at Heartbeat don't have. And that's what Tammy Brown noticed when she started Heartbeat. I know I've been here before. My spiels are kind of the same. I need to write down, but did I talk to that church for 5 minutes last time or 10, or did they already hear this? So hopefully if it's some of it's rerun things, there's different things that you get out of it, because I always pray, God, what do they need to hear? And every time it's a little bit different, because he sends somebody else, because I'm just a mouthpiece, because I talk a lot. So he sends out his words. But Tammy Brown started Heartbeat of Morrow County, and she was in Tennessee at the time. Her husband was playing football, and she found out that she was pregnant, and that was not exactly what they had planned. And some of the people at the hospital where she worked and at the college where he was playing football said, well, we can help you take care of that, and so it doesn't mess up your plans here. And they're like, no, we're going to keep it. And people are like, oh, okay. So then they were right there to support them. They knew someone who worked at a diaper factory and someone else that could get them food. They were away from their family, but the people at the hospital and the college surrounded them with love and helped them through and were there for them. So Tammy also noticed at the hospital that some of the ladies that she was caring for, because she was on the maternity floor, that they had gone through an abortion. And she thought, well, I'm gonna talk to these ladies and find out, how did they get to that point? She said, because I was at that point where it's scary and people helped me through. Were there not people there to help them, or how did they come to that? And when she talked to these ladies and found out that they were devastated, they were scared, they were alone, they felt like they didn't have any other choices, they felt like they would be doing a child a disservice to bring it into the life that they were leading. And it was just on her heart at that time, God was planting seeds for her to do something, so that when somebody is in a situation where people are saying, hey, you have a choice, what are you going to do, that they feel like they have the support and the love to be able to bring those children with help. Because it's not enough to say, oh, choose wisely and pat them on the back and send them on their way. So she started Heartbeat of Morrow County in her kitchen. She'd counsel ladies at her kitchen, and that was in 1984. And God has just blessed us over and over and over. Every time the devil throws a stumbling block in the way, we just are able to overcome it. They change laws about who can and cannot administer pregnancy tests, and we were grandfathered in. And we lost the building that we were renting, and Morrow County Hospital stopped up and let us use a place for a short time for free. And then Dr. Hint said, I'll sell you my building for a pretty good price. So we're buying that from him, and we can paint things and change them and do what we need to do for I tend to say young ladies, but it's not just young ladies. We have a lot of grandmas that are raising little babies that they have custody of, and we have dads that come in, and we have couples that come in, and aunts and uncles and foster parents and a wide variety of people that for one reason or another are having trouble making ends meet and they need some things for their little ones. So we are totally supported by area churches. There's no government money that comes in, so we are able to talk with them about our walk with God and what God's plan for them may be, and to give them that hope that Matt was talking about. Because that first song that you guys sang, I could have just came up and said, put those words up again, read that, that's it. A lot of them are scared and broken and just devastated, and they don't see that hope. So that's our job. Give them diapers and clothes and hope in there with them. If we let the government try to take care of these people, because there are all kind of agencies and things out there, they're not necessarily going to show them the love, because the government doesn't really recognize their unborn child as life. And so they're coming at it from a little bit different angle. If I were holding an eagle egg in my hand and I crushed it, I would have, I think it was like 3 years in jail and several $1,000 fine. And I'm a science teacher, nature lover. I'd never crush an eagle egg. They're protected and they're important. But it's just this little guy that's about 10 weeks on his journey to meet us. So So what, he's already alive, and God already has a plan for him. And to explain that to the young ladies, that God already has a plan for that tiny little person that they're just finding out exists, can take a lot of weight off of their shoulders if they can get that hope and that trust in God. I like to read Psalm 139 when I get a chance. We have a lot of Bibles in there that have been donated. We like to use a version with them called the Message, that's written on a translation that they can easily understand. And I like to read that one myself, even though I was raised up in the church. But this one, oops, I turned on the wrong one. Devil gets me sometimes. Slows my hand. In Psalm 139, 13 through 16, I know you've heard this one before about us being knit together in the womb. For you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body, and all the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. So God already saw us, and he knew we were there before our mother knew we were there. And he knew how long, you know, we were going to be here. And I know some of you are familiar with my family story. He knew that my nephew Sawyer was going to be down here for 3 years and one day. And we can't lament that or go back or change that, because that's how it was before he came. And he knew that Chris's grandma was going to live a long, full life, and that when it was her day, it would be her day. Why does it have to be in such a tragic way and not in the sleep? That's the part we don't know. That's where the trust comes in. We don't understand that piece of it, but God already has it all figured out for us. And another example of that is in Genesis, in the very first crisis pregnancy. A lot of the girls think that there's not, the Bible is old and it doesn't apply to today. But there is so much scandal in here, if they will read through. A lot of it is like a soap opera. There was power, and there was love, and there was stealing and mistrust. And it's all in there. And Tammy Brown, that started Heartbeat, this was a story that she would use about Hagar. Because Sarah and Abraham, obviously, are very godly people. And this is like a little part that they kind of skipped over in all my Sunday school classes. Maybe it was a little uncomfortable for some of the Sundays. Some of you are laughing because some of you know that story. You're like, oh, yeah, I know that one. So God told Abraham, you're going to have a son. Well, they were getting to be up there, like past nursing home age by today's standards. And so they decided, well, he said you were going to have a son, but he didn't tell us exactly how this was going to happen. And like humans, we take things into our own hands, and we do what we think God wanted us to do, and we get off of the path, and we don't trust him anymore. And so so Sarah sent her maiden Hagar to go and be with her husband, because she's like, this isn't working out for us, so let's try plan B. So Hagar becomes pregnant. Well, that's not what God had planned. That's not what he told them. They didn't listen. And, of course, there's jealousy and hatred, and it's not going well. So Hagar runs away. So she's alone, and she's pregnant, and she's young. She's got no one else. And that's exactly where some of our young ladies are when they come. In Genesis 16, 7 through 11, it says, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that's beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarah, where have you come from, and where are you going? I'm running away from my mistress Sarah, she answered. And then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count. And the angel of the Lord also said to her, you're now with child, and you will have a son, and you shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. And then he goes on, he says he's going to be a donkey of a man. He's going to be quite stubborn. He tells her what his personality is like. And that brings me peace in a way, because when I think if you're trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle and you're just looking at one little piece, someone hands you one piece, you're never going to figure out what it is. And that's what we're doing our whole life. We can only see our piece. Sometimes we get glimpses of the pieces around us, but we can only see our piece. And God is omniscient, and he can see he's got the box. He made the box. He's got the picture in front of him, and he knows where our piece is supposed to be. And he moves us around, and it's really satisfying when it snaps into place where it's supposed to be, and it makes something beautiful. And so that's what we don't understand when someone's alone and has a baby and they're like, why? I don't know. You just have to trust because God's moving your peace around. You know, why, you know, why was there a car accident? Why did Sawyer leave when he was only three? We don't know why, but our peace is getting moved around because there is a reason. We'll understand later. As we think back to when we were little kids, things our parents explained to us later, we're like, that we can't understand it right now. And in my college class, I loved college. I'm a teacher. I'm a super nerd. So I loved college, but I hated my philosophy class because it made me question everything I'd been raised on. You know, I just, there's God because there's God. Green tractors are better than red tractors because they are. These are just things I was raised on. You know, that I didn't know the reasons really to argue with it. Everybody I have been surrounded with either went to church and believed in God, or they didn't go to church, but they did believe their loved ones were going to heaven, and they pray when they got, you know, really scared. So to meet people at college who didn't believe in God, I thought, I don't know what to do with that. And part of it is one of their arguments was if God already knows what you're going to do, then you don't have free will. And he's just walking around like G.I. Joe or Barbie, and you're not making these choices. And I struggled with that, and I didn't know how to argue with that until I became a parent. And then I learned with that. You learn so much when you're in charge of somebody else. And I realized that we're like God's kids, and I know what my kids are going to do. You know, usually I can pretty much predict. And you've seen kids running towards a swing, and it's moving, and you're yelling, stop, look out, you're going to get kicked in the head. And they don't listen, and they run, and they get kicked in the head, and they're laying on the ground, and they're crying, and you knew it was going to happen. Did you make it happen? No. But they had free will. You told them, stop. You warned them, but they did it anyway. And you picked them up, and they think it's the end of the world. They might even be bleeding, but you know it's not. You can brush them off and stand them back up. And I think over and over again, God sends us warnings, and he sends us signs about what he wants us to do, and then you hope that when they're in a situation like where they can help a friend, that they do what you want them to do. Sometimes they don't do what you want them to do at all. My oldest, he's 21 now. They turn 18, the handle falls right off of those kids. And they don't listen to you at all. They do their own thing. And luckily, mine have done pretty well. But I think that's how God feels about us. It's like he gave us all of the equipment, and then he can kind of predict what we're going to do. But when we screw up, he's going to stand us back up, and he's going to dust us off, and we might think it's the end of the world, but he knows that it's not. And that's where some of these young ladies are. They really feel like they're at the end of the world. They can't see past the pain that they're in right at the moment. Some of them had been kicked out of their house because of their situation. Some of them, the guy took off the minute he found out that they were pregnant. Their friends that were telling them this is what everybody's doing are now making fun of them and sending videos of them all around Snapchat and making fun of them for being pregnant. And so the people that they thought loved them are sometimes just not there for them or have turned their back on them. And so they're in a whole new world. If we can get them to come into church, we get them plugged in with the family. Some of their families are so dysfunctional. If they could just come here and sit with you all and feel the love or any of our churches in Morrow County that are there to love them, that would be wonderful. They don't realize what Christians are. They think you're all sitting here with little halos above your head. You're all perfect. You don't do anything wrong. And so one of the things that we try to do is let them know that you've been helped by a lot of Christians in your life, but they're not always wearing their God t-shirt and their cross necklace. So if you have those, put them on because they don't always recognize us. They just think we're nice people, and they don't realize that's God helping them. But if we can get them to go into a church and get plugged in with someone that will be there, give them some stability, that's what's missing in a lot of their lives. For some of them, that's how they got into this situation. They were looking for love and acceptance in the wrong place, or they were purposely looking for a baby because they wanted someone that would love them back unconditionally because they can't get that anywhere else. So if we can help them get that in the church, it's good not only for them, but for their whole family and everyone that they're with. There's a couple that was at Heartbeat, and they've moved on to Columbus, and I still pray for them and worry about them a lot. But I was really trying to get them to come to church. He had a felony against him for stealing enough copper that becomes a felony, since that's what his friends thought was a good idea. And so that's what he had done, and his girlfriend had a seizure disorder, so she was on disability. So they got $700 a month or something like that, and that's what they were living on. with this beautiful little girl, one of the most beautiful little girls I've ever seen. They love her dearly, and they're good parents, and she is their world. And they lived in a house in Mount Gilead that a relative of theirs owned, and he would work on some of the other rentals to help pay their rent. And they would come in. If our doors were open, they were there. When we were crossing the fairgrounds, they had walked half a mile to get where we were in the rain and the snow. When I got there at 6 to open it up, once there they were with the stroller all covered in plastic and those two soaking wet because Heartbeat was open. So they came. They didn't have anywhere else to go. They had no TV. They had not a lot in their house. They earned enough baby bucks through reading devotional books and watching the parenting videos that they had earned a baby bed. So Sally Walker, her kids go out to Northmore too. She's one of the volunteers. She loaded it up and drove it out to their house. And she came back and she said, they don't have anything. She goes, like, there's in the kitchen, there's a refrigerator and there's a stove. And in the dining room, there's a tiny little table. And in the living room, there is a futon facing a blank wall. There's nothing on the wall. There aren't any curtains. There aren't any rugs. There aren't any decorations. And there's one little room, and she said it has some little baby toys and things and stuff that she has earned from Heartbeat. And she said, that's all they have. She said, they have nothing. And I'm like, I can see why when our doors were open, they were there. And when she turned two, and they had a birthday party, they invited people from Heartbeat. So some of us went, and they invited people from the library. That was the other place they walked, people from Goodwill and people from Save-A-Lot, because that was their family. That's who came. There weren't any relatives. There weren't any friends. There were just that group. But she was what was keeping them from making mistakes in life, from getting sucked back into bad choices, because they wanted to be good parents for her, and they were learning how to do that themselves through the devotional books and the parents. They were really trying. And I kept trying to get him into church. And he said, well, she can go, but I can't go with you. And I said, why not? It doesn't matter what you wear. You can wear jeans. My husband wears jeans every time he comes to church. And he said, no, it's the tattoos. I'm like, oh, my husband has a couple tattoos. That's no big deal. He did have a lot of them, but he said, no, I'm not going to go. So then it's like awkward silence. So I'm trying to make conversation. So I said, well, sometimes their memorial tattoos are meaning. And I pointed one on his arm and I said, what's that one mean? And he clapped his hand over it. And he said, if you knew my stories, you wouldn't like me anymore. And I thought, how true is that for all of us sitting here? If the people around us knew some of our deepest, darkest secrets, where we really screwed up and we're glad that nobody knows that, if it was written on the outside of us, would we have the strength to come to the door? And that's where he was. He had screwed up so royally, he didn't think that he was valuable enough to come to church. And I never got him to come, and I never got her to come either, because her sleep schedules were crazy with her seizure disorder, and I never got her to come either. But I still pray for them. And I know that we planted seeds, and I know that they love their daughter. And we do a lot of seed planting at Heartbeat, and we don't know exactly how those things are gonna play out. All we can do is pray for them and hope that they remember. And you guys probably don't even realize how many seeds you plant. When I go by here in the mornings at 6:30 on my way to school to go teach in Cardington, there are cars out there that are waiting on their ride to go to Pioneer. And some of those are probably people you know, and some of them are probably kids that don't go to church. But you're letting them use your space, and you're showing them some kindness. You're helping them when they have a need to get to church, and hopefully later when they have another need and they need help to get to the next spot in their life, they're going to remember that you helped them. And those little seeds you plant, you don't even realize you're doing it. But I think of that when I see lights here in the morning, and I know that other people that drive by see that too, and they're sparking, like, why are there people at the church so early in the morning? What are they doing? What's going on there? And you're planting seeds with people that don't even stop, but it's working. One of the stories I was at a service once where they started talking about Rahab, who was a prostitute, and I thought, oh, I could tease that. You know, with the girls, he's like, I bet you didn't think I was going to be talking about that in church today. But it's a really good story because a lot like the guy with the tattoos, a lot of them think that they are too far down the wrong path to turn around and come back. And there's no such thing as that. You can always turn around and come back. So we're like, well, I said, well, there's a story about Rahab, and she's a prostitute. So, you know, she's made some interesting choices. And they're like, oh, yeah, not that bad. So then, you know, because they think there's a hierarchy of badness. You know, they've got, like, the preacher way up here, and they've got people, you know, in their mind who's worse. And in reality, all of us are sinners. We're all on the same level. But Rahab helped the spies, and God knew he was going to help her. He was going to use her. It was a great place for the spies to go because people are going in and out. People are telling secrets. Nobody's going to think much of the foot traffic. And so they sneak up on the roof. They're not even in the front door. So while they were up there in the second chapter of Joshua in verse 8, Joshua 2:8, it says, before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof. They're talking about Rahab. She went up there to see them, and she said to them, I know the Lord has given this land to you, and a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Shinar and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. And when we heard of it, our hearts melted and everyone's courage failed because of you, for the Lord your God is God in heaven and on the earth below. There's your confession of faith. There's a prostitute that just came to these spies and gave a confession of faith. She believes that God is God. And that's all it takes to believe in him and then take the next steps. Now, she did it out of pure fear. And that, unfortunately, that's how a lot of people come to God, when they get to that point where they have nowhere else to turn and they are in pure fear. But she turned to God, or she called out to God. It says, now then, please swear to me that by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family. She doesn't ask for forgiveness and herself. It's for her family. And that's where a lot of these young people are. They know that they're in a bad situation, that their family sometimes is a hot mess. But now they're in charge of somebody else, and they want things to be better, just like Rahab. Because I've shown kindness to you, give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and my mother and my brothers and sisters and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. And then if you go on in other parts of the body that are body, other, I just slipped right into a science lesson there. Other parts of the Bible, it mentions Rahab again. And some Bible scholars say that's a totally different Rahab. I tend to believe it's not. It's one of my top 10 questions I want to go up there. Rahab shows up in the line of David. She goes from being a prostitute to being in the line of David. You can't screw up too royally to turn around and get back on track. And I think that's a very good example for these young people that think they're too far gone and they're so young. God has their puzzle piece, and he's gonna move it around. That's my own mom story. I was raised in the church, and I knew all of the Bible. We had a Sunday school teacher that really liked our class, so she moved with our class. We knew which ones were poetry and which ones were law. We could say them all forwards and backwards and all of that. And so when I got to high school, I thought, I don't need that. I got it. I understand it. And I quit going to church. And God's like, oh, for crying out loud, how am I going to get back on track? So he put me in that philosophy class to show me how much I didn't know. And that was a seed. And then when my husband and I got married, we bought the house directly across from a parsonage for accountability, the preacher from my in-law's church. So we started going down there, started going to Bible studies. And so I grew. But then when I became a mom, when I got pregnant, I'm like, okay, so I'm only going to worry for that first trimester. And then that's the danger time. And then after that, you don't have to worry anymore. But that time came and went, and I still worried. Then you only worry until they're born. Once they're born, then it'll be fine. You don't have to worry anymore, but still worried. Then you only worry for the first 3 months because of SIDS. And after that, I still worry. So they're 21, 17, 15. And you still worry about them. But I realized for the first time that, no, I didn't have it. I didn't have control of everything. And I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know how they're going to go off in their lives, and I need a God to be in their life. And that's when I felt helpless to protect them, is when my own relationship with God really blossomed, even though I had been raised in a church. One of my favorite verses to to share with them. If I only get to share one, I go into Ephesians, because they don't understand about grace and forgiveness. We've got these devotional books they can pick up, and one of the girls that was there, just with a friend, she picked up one that the title was about a clean slate and starting over, and she's like, that'd be nice, stick it back on there. And I said, no, it is nice. That's a real thing, you know. If you, as humans, we say we're going to forgive and forget, but in the back of our mind, we still remember some of the hurt. It's really hard to forgive and forget. We struggle with it. But when God forgives it and wipes it clean, it is wiped totally clean. And she said, well, they wouldn't want. I said, you should go to church and learn about that. And she said, well, they wouldn't want me in a Bible study or a church because I'd argue too much. And I'm like, that's what makes a Sunday school class fun, because if one person talks and everybody else just nods, people start to fall asleep. But if you get a good argument going, that's when some growth happens. And I don't know if she ever went, because she was just a friend of a friend that was there. But we, hopefully we planted some seeds with her. And I read to her Ephesians 2, 1 through 10. Ephesians 2, 1 through 10. It says, as for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins, in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world and the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. All of us also lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our sinful nature, following its desires and thoughts. And like the rest, we were by nature objects of wrath, that we're all sinners. Every single one of us, from Mother Teresa to the Pope, the people who they picture as holy in their mind, everybody is a sinner. But, and I've got that one circled, this is the good part, this is what saves us, there's a but, we're all sinners, but because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ even when we were dead in transgressions. And it's by grace that you've been saved. And they have no idea what grace is. They think grace is someone from study hall or something that grandma says at Easter, but they don't really understand what a gift that grace is. And God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus, in order that in the coming ages he might show the incomparable riches of his grace, expressed in his kindness to us in Christ Jesus. For it is by grace that you've been saved through faith, and it's not from ourselves. So in high school, when I thought I had it all under control and I had figured it out, I didn't. I needed God. I needed his grace and his forgiveness. And when I had a little one on the way and I realized how helpless I was, I realized that I needed that grace and forgiveness and that help. We can't save ourselves. It's a gift from God, and it's not by work. So we don't get any extra credit heaven points for volunteering at church or volunteering at Heartbeat. That doesn't help us get any closer. We grow during those times, and that helps us get closer. But you can't earn your way in. We can't be good enough to earn our way in, because none of us are going to be good enough if that was how it went. So no one can boast. But we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God has prepared in advance for us to do. And I love that part. God has prepared in advance. He saw us in the womb. He knew how many days we'd be here. He found, he found Hagar and told her what her son's name would be. He's already got it all under control. So when they don't have someone in their life saying it's going to be okay, that they can trust, they need to know that with God it's going to be okay. Even when bad things happen that we think are the end of the world, it is going to be okay. He's going to pick us up. He's going to dust us off, because he already has a plan. He already has it figured out. And that is just takes a huge weight off of my shoulders, because I can't solve all those problems myself. And for our young ladies and couples that are coming in, that's often how they feel too. I feel my mom used to speak for Right to Life when I was a little kid, and I used to sit underneath the table at fairs while she was talking to people, and God was planting the seeds. Knew at 47 I'd be up here talking, and it's funny how God, because then just about the time you think, oh, that's God wanted me to do that, he planted seeds, that's where I'm supposed to be. I think the reason he had me work at Heartbeat was to train me, because I think his real job, we're all trying to figure out his real job for me, one person named Kristen that used to be one of my students, and the interaction, she's not a Heartbeat client, and she's not pregnant, but But she reached out to me, and she had had a hard upbringing, and so I've been taking her to church and trying to get her to church. And after the first Sunday, I said, "How was that?" She goes, "That was weird." And she said, "Well, he was only talking to me. I don't know why the rest of you were there." And I'm like, "Yeah, that happens." I said, "God has a plan." I said, "You weren't the only one. Other people picked up on different parts. It's all for them." And then the next Sunday that she went with me, I got her a copy of the message. And so I gave her that before we went in. And she carried it in there. She carried it back out. And we got in the car. And she turned to me and she said, "How do you work this? Show me where that is." And I was just like, like my puzzle piece snapped into place. It's like, my job isn't heartbeat. My job isn't here. This is my training. She's my job. And he's got a job for all of us. And the reason we're still here is because we're not done with our job. And so part of what you're doing at Heartbeat is helping us to do somebody's job. You might not be walking in there, but when you put those coins in the baby bottles and it helps us to pay the rent and or help the payment now because we're buying the place, to pay that payment and to keep the lights on and to buy more size 4 diapers because we run out of those like crazy. We're always running out of 4s and 5s, toddler socks, underwear, the sippy cups and the bottles. We're always running out of those, and we use those dollars to go and resupply those things when we run low. We've never had anybody come in and need something that we can't find. Their winter coats were low on, and last year somebody needed a winter coat that we didn't have. We put a message out on Facebook and said, "Hey, we need a winter coat," and boom, 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 we had 3 of them. And by the next day, you know, less than 24 hours, she had one hand delivered to her front door for her little guy. And that's the kind of community that we live in, and that's the kind of community that loves these people. And when they leave and they say thank you, and they always do, I always tell them, it's not me, that it's the churches that love you and care about you and want to make sure that you feel that you have what you need for your little ones, and that they can take away some of your stress so you can focus on moving forward. And they're surprised sometimes if I does coming from churches, but you are doing good work and you're helping me to do my job. So thank you very much for letting me speak to you today. And if anybody ever wants a tour down there, I have keys and I can show you around. Or if you want to be a part of Heartbeat, I find it pretty rewarding. There's some people that like to talk to the ladies and counsel with them, and other people are like, "Nope, I'm going to go in the basement and sort clothes, and I'm going to sew stuff back on, and I'm going to take home the stuff that smells like it's been in someone's basement for a while and wash it up." So we love that. So thank you so much for what you do.
So,